Well, sit back and relax. It's that time of the week. Gather around the fireside and share some stories with the Pilgrim on the 405, the only pioneer out there in the wilderness, gathering the wit and wisdom of the world and finding out what's working and what's not working in today's strange new world of sales. So here he is, without any further ado, your own personal guide through this 21st century trail, Will Crist.
Well, welcome to a wonderful clear day here in Laguna Beach. Boy, when these Santa Ana winds blow through, they take away all the stuff in the air, and it is just crystal clear. Shout outs to all of our friends out on the East Coast. I mean, they are shutting down stuff left and right to deal with all this snow and the wind blowing out there. It's got to be really tough, really tough. And listen, for you guys in California, don't gloat too much. We don't want them all to coming out here and tipping us on the side down here. This is only the land for fruits and nuts. Just remind them that. It's awfully nice. You know, as I've been walking around on 405 and talking to people in Orange County, lots of different things, new things coming up. Certainly all the things we've been talking about a different marketplace, new products, ways of tweaking the prospecting process, coming up with great ideas to deal with this new marketplace. People are busy, 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 but they're busy in a good way. They're busy with new opportunities, coming up with new strategies for marketing, coming up with new ways to help solve problems that people have, and coming up with new systems for finding out exactly what those problems are. And that really comes down to what salespeople do, what system they're using, sell, how they approach their prospects, what happens in the first 30 seconds, the first 1 minute, the first 5 minutes, and from then on, what's the process for selling? And do we do it every time? Do we consistently follow a successful sales system, one that is effective? It's not right or wrong. There's lots of things out there that one can do. The question is not, is that the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do? The real question is, is that effective? Is it helping me accomplish what I want to do? And hopefully what I want to do is to help my prospects solve their problem in the quickest, most effective, most efficient fashion possible. And any time that we lengthen the sales process because of what we do rather than what is happening with our prospect, we're not doing them any favors. So I thought it would be really interesting to talk with a very successful salesperson, the regional sales manager of one of the companies that I've worked with, and I know them very well, know that they are very innovative, creative, work all over Southern California and certainly in this country. I wanted to invite the regional sales manager of Alpha Bio to be with us and talk a little bit about what's going on through his eyes, what he sees out there in the marketplace and what he's doing to sell in this new marketplace. So welcome, Kent Lubbin.
Thank you, Will. How are you today?
Well, wonderful, wonderful. Now, am I right? You're in San Francisco right now?
I'm in the Bay Area, sitting in a beautiful parking lot of Amgen's in Fremont.
Okay, excellent, excellent. Well, yeah, you heard what we're going to be talking about. So tell us a little bit about what Alpha Bio is, what you do, what kind of problems you solve, and for whom you solve them.
Oh, Alpha Bio is kind of a unique company. We're like a boutique pharmaceutical biotech process equipment manufacturer. And what makes us unique is we look at our customers' applications and their needs from a component view, a systems view, as well as a engineering view. We have those expertise within our company, and we pull together and share that information to offer solutions to the issues, problems, or pains that our customers have.
Well, that's certainly something I have been very impressed with for the very first time that I met Michael Gagne, your president. This is a company that focuses on solving problems for major pharmaceutical companies. Is that fair to say?
It really is. And what's interesting about and fun about working with Alpha Bio is because we don't do things the same old way. We look at it from outside the box, and instead of wondering, you know, how we can just provide the same solution, we spend a little more time with that customer looking for bottlenecks or improvements that they need or want, and then add that to the solution for a happier customer.
Well, let's talk a little bit now. The whole area of pharmaceuticals and biochemical companies, has that been expanding? Enough opportunities expanding there, or have they been contracting in the past couple of years?
They have been contracting, which gives us a greater challenge as a company. What we've done is we've expanded our markets or industries that we call on with related companies. For example, you know, we do a lot of biotech and pharmaceutical. Well, the nutraceutical market, which is, you know, let's say the vitamin industry or the cosmetic industry, they use the same products that we sell to the pharmaceutical and biopharm companies, so that we've increased our range or number of companies that we can call on to sell our products.
So you've looked into new marketplaces?
A variety of new marketplaces. I think if anyone that is just calling on the pharma, biopharm industry has stayed pat and not looked at expanding and growing a company, they're probably one of those that's been left in the wake or has closed.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that you found helpful that others might emulate is, if you're not finding enough opportunities in your current marketplace, take a look at some other marketplaces. What other places, if you Googled, might come up as potential opportunities you could solve other companies' different way of coming at it. Is that right?
Yes. We actually, from the sales team that we've got, Alpha Bio, from engineering all the way to our inside sales people, we've worked real hard with referrals, and I think that's something that we've gotten pretty good at asking for, because a referral is a lot easier for a salesperson to make the next call on someone you don't know, rather than just Googling, getting a company name, and cold calling it, which is time-consuming as well as somewhat expensive.
Mm-hmm. So you're getting referrals, and that's been something new. Is that right?
I think it is new. We've got a lot of past history with Alpha Bios, Michael Gagne especially, and Stephen Cates, who was with Sartorius for many years. They've got a wealth of contacts, and sharing those contacts, reestablishing those relationships, and asking for a referral has gotten a little easier, because we've just made a conscious effort to make that initial call to get that referral. Where, you know, a lot of sales, we've got a new salesman, and he's found it a little difficult to ask for a referral, because he didn't know as many people as we do in the industries. But what mm-hmm. he's found is, if he just asks for a referral, about half the time, he gets a name.
Yeah.
Nothing Excellent. Magic about it. It's just asking for the referral. As simple as, do you know anybody else in the same industry or in the same industrial park that might need some of our products?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So asking for referrals is important. You found that is something you can do in addition to looking at new marketplaces.
Exactly.
At the customers that you currently have, and asking them to direct you to people who might have similar issues.
Yes.
All right. What else have you done to increase sales? What have you found that's really helpful in this marketplace?
One of the key areas is we've got a number of real good, solid manufacturers that we've worked with over the years. Because we're looking at a couple different new markets, cosmetic, a little bit of food and beverage, as well as a nutraceutical, we went out and at a couple of the larger trade shows, Interphex, over the last couple of years, and ISBE trade shows, we talked to a number of vendors or suppliers that we liked, and they were not real happy with their distribution partners. So what we did was we've actually signed on three or four key suppliers, and not just a Me Too supplier or just another supplier, but a very good supplier, good product and brand recognition, good customer service, and somebody who's looking to grow with a distribution company like Alpha Bios. Mm-hmm. With those suppliers, we've asked them for a little bit more of a buy-in than a typical distributor would. We're asking them to participate in a sales plan by coming out to California here, riding with us, increased training just within the company as well as our customers.
Uh-huh. So this is this sounds pretty innovative. How long has that been going?
We've done it for probably about 9 months, but I sent out a quarterly 2011 plan to every one of our suppliers, listing when I'm in Northern California, our other salespeople are in. We cover Bakersfield, for instance, do a lot of food and beverage up there in Southern California, San Diego. We ask them to plan through the year, coming out and making calls with us. It sounds real simple. That, you know, we've worked with these companies for many years, and a few of them just the last couple of years. But nobody asks the manufacturers to come out and work with them. A lot of times there's a distance that's kept between the distributor and manufacturer. One or the other doesn't want to share the companies and contacts that they call on. But we sat down and we thought, what a great way to combine the talents, the contacts, and, you know, grow those product lines, because if those manufacturers are out with us, making calls with us, they're higher up on the radar versus the other suppliers that are reluctant to come out and spend a week in the California market.
Hmm. Wow. That's interesting. So
go ahead.
So you're asking them to come out at their own expense, right?
Yes, at their own expense.
All right, so they come out, and what happens?
What happens when they come out, or what happens when I ask them?
Well, both. That's an interesting question.
Well, what was interesting, the first probably four or five responses I got back was, no one's ever asked us for this, and a couple of them said, I don't plan more than a quarter in advance. Mm-hmm. And with as busy as we are, we were looking to populate the calendar around a number of larger trade shows like the Interphex show in New York. We offered to do some staffing at those large trade shows, and then we asked for them to participate in the local ISPE vendor shows in San Francisco, Los Angeles, and San Diego, as well as out in Colorado, where we do a kind of a niche business out there, and we've gotten great response because I think they liked being asked to help.
Hmm. Excellent. All right. So you've looked into new marketplaces. What was the second thing?
In new markets, and as well as I think the increased training by those manufacturers keeps us more abreast of what their product line is and what they have new coming out.
All right, so you've got looked in new marketplaces, you've gotten more focused on getting referrals from existing clients, and now you're engaging your manufacturers in a new way to relate, so you're more joined at the hip. Is that right?
Exactly. And it's been very very well received, as well as successful. In fact, Mike Gagne, our president, has been contacted by a couple of their presidents and general managers, And the comment was, we don't have anybody else asking to do this, and this is what we we'd like to model. And I was asked if I could, if they could share my the simple plan with other key distributors of theirs across the country. And you know, that's I think that's where we all learn and grow.
All right. Now, your company has been known for innovation. What have you done to innovate?
Well, we have a product that Michael and Stephen have developed and patented called the Artisan Arterial Valve Line, which is a single-use or disposable valve line. And not only the valves, but the fittings, the valve arrays, and the systems, chromatography skin, TFF, pH systems. We didn't come out with just a valve. We came out with complete systems and turnkey products that address the hot, single-use, disposable topic that is what every single manufacturer of drugs, whether it be a large Amgen, Genentech, to a small contract manufacturing company, they're all looking to utilize single-use or disposable somewhere in their process.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, where did this idea come from? Is this something that Michael and his engineers, Stephen, did they just sit around the corner and say, let's go build this?
No. It goes back to the way the Aquacin diaphragm valve was conceived. There are a number of diaphragm valves, and they all have the same end-to-end dimensions and end connections. So they're all similar in the external physical property or dimensions. What Michael did with that product was solved all of the issues that some of the existing diaphragm manufacturers didn't machine out or didn't engineer out. They just kept that product, and the Aquacin diaphragm valve was actually designed for the pharmaceutical industry. Mm-hmm. Like he has done with the Artisan single-use valves. He's looked at where are the bottlenecks and what is not being addressed in the process, and that's what the Artisan pinch valve technology, that's where he came up with that, and the logical step of a pre-molded tubing set just makes it a very easy to use, and the comment we get from many customers is, "Wow, that's so simple. No one else has got that," and we're actually driving some companies to use those products so that they can get into the single use disposable valve, you know, lines in their processes.
Mm-hmm. Now, so then this innovation really came from listening to customers and helping them to articulate what their problems were, and then your team came up with some solutions. I understand that you went back to the marketplace several times, beta samples, and got them to participate in engineering this.
And we got great response with Michael's contacts in the industry and Stephen Cates, our engineer, who can speak that engineese like our customers' engineers speak too, with the feedback and the tweaking and the comparisons of, especially in systems, what exists now versus what is actually wanted or needed in the industry. I think there isn't anybody better than Steve Cates at listening to a customer, repeating it back to them, and hearing exactly what they're saying, and then offering a solution in an engineering design response.
Uh-huh. Okay. So finding the issues that customers have Now, did they know, did your customers know that they had this problem before they got started?
Yes. But what they didn't know was that there were other sources. We're competing against probably two or three of the largest suppliers in the pharmaceutical market. The largest one has the ability to tell the engineers and designers of their manufacturing process to change the process to fit the equipment that they provide.
Uh-huh.
And because if you're the 600-pound gorilla, which has the piece of equipment, at times you can do that. What uh-huh. we've offered is a product that can be adapted to their process, which eliminates a lot of the issues that a quote unquote, cookie cutter piece of equipment doesn't allow.
So you folks have really been very, very proactive throughout this late unpleasantness.
We have. In fact, we've been challenged and asked why we haven't been advertising and smearing the pharmaceutical magazines or the industry magazines with this product. We didn't want to do that. What we wanted to do was go out into the marketplace, as Michael and Steve have done and myself, find out what the pains are, bring those back. So when we entered the market in a systems-focused strategy, we knew ahead of time what a lot of the pains were, and they were solved with the products we're now offering.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's very impressive for a company to be that nimble, to be able to renegotiate with manufacturers, how you're relating to them, what kinds of things you're going to do to work with them to sell together, to come up with a common strategy for selling in this marketplace, to go back and really focus on getting referrals from happy customers, looking at new marketplaces, and then finally innovation, and innovation, not that you have to go and sit on a mountaintop and dream up a new product, but to sit down with customers and begin to articulate with them what their real issues are, and then use your expertise to help solve those problems and then generate a product that they're probably sitting there waiting for.
Many of them are. I took Steve into a call with a fairly large pharmaceutical company and showed him a drawing that Steve had prepared for the chromatography system. And he didn't reply with any words when he saw the system because he had just bought our competitor's product because they had to buy another one, and that's what existed there. He didn't say anything. All he did was groan because he knew he was buying a system that was more expensive than ours, wouldn't do as much as ours, and that they didn't really like.
Ooh-wee. That is interesting. That is interesting. Well, all right. Tell us a little bit about what sort of obstacles have you found in the marketplace?
Obstacles, right off the bat, would be it's a new product. And mm-hmm. and a lot of people want to see a little more of a legacy product out there. And coming out with a new product is a challenge. We've got a new name for the Artisan valve. Most have not heard of it or seen it. So the challenge is getting them to realize that the product is a well thought out, well designed product for the marketplace.
Okay. Now, what do you see in the coming the rest of this year? What sorts of new projects do you have? What sorts of opportunities are out there for you?
Well, I think what we're seeing is there is a little uptick in the pharma biopharm industries because over the last couple of years, a number of even the small projects have been put on hold because everybody's wondering, when is this downturn going to start moving up? And we're seeing a lot of small projects and medium to almost large products coming out to the RFP phase in the development of that project and get it on the books and actually bid and built. So we're seeing more activity, and we're seeing a lot more of our mechanical contractor customers that are getting a lot more projects out there, and we're getting the option of quoting on more projects than we have in the last probably 2 years.
Really? So you're seeing a lot of opportunities coming up.
We are. I think, throughout the company, we've talked about, Big Pharma has bought up quite a few of these medium or small-sized companies. And I think our apprehension is, we love the small and medium-sized pharma companies because they're the innovative, creative ones that are always looking for the new technology. And that's where we really fill that niche. A lot of times the Big Pharma is slow to move, but the smaller ones are now starting to get some venture capital. They're starting to go from the lab and concept to a pilot project, and I think we'll see quite a few of those companies over the next year or two starting to grow into a small or medium sized company, and hopefully they don't just get all bought up by the big pharma companies.
Okay, all right. Now, talk to salespeople there. Talk to them. Spend the next 5 minutes talking to salespeople, and some of them are going to be fairly new to the marketplace. Some are going to be, lots of experience, and some will be highly successful. Talk to them a little bit about what you see coming up and what sorts of tools and techniques and attitudes that you have that have been successful.
Well, I think with any salesperson, if you don't plan you fail to plan, you plan to fail. I think the planning is where are you today and where do you want to be tomorrow? If you don't have a picture of that, that's hard to move forward. It's fun to go to work when you've got a plan and you see how it's developing and where you're going to go. Taking the planning and spending the time to figure out, what are your strengths and putting those into a strategic plan where you break it down into the products you sell, the customers that buy those products, and then identify your existing customers who may be able to buy those products and you haven't presented those products to them because they haven't bought that in the past. And I think the easiest way to increase sales, the lowest hanging fruit, is with your existing customers. But what's more fun is to find those customers that aren't using your product that could be, and that's an initiative that you can create. We've got a new mixer line, for instance, and it's actually bringing us into the food and beverage market where we haven't really played much, but also into the cosmetic market. We took one of our newest salesmen, made him the mixer specialist for this product line, and he is he's become a champion of it because of the buy-in that he's got now to with the supplier, with the manufacturer, and partnering with them to really, really do well with that product line. And he may be new. I've given him a little bit of leeway and said, well, where should we go? He came back to me he'd come back with a couple ideas. Came back with a plan on where we should be selling this, a few markets we hadn't thought of, and he's making those calls to qualify or disqualify those companies within those fringe markets that may or may not be good prospects for that mixer line. Mm-hmm. And he's having fun at work, which I think we all want to make sure we enjoy what we do.
Yeah, that does seem to be a good rule to follow, doesn't it? If you're not having fun, stop doing it.
Find out
why you're not having fun.
Exactly, and I listen to Dennis Prager, and he has a happiness hour, and he just says start acting happy and you'll be happy, and that may be a little on the surface, but I think if you enjoy improving your customers, either manufacturing, improving their efficiencies, improving their output, which improves the bottom line, and that's where every one of our customers want us to affect is the bottom line, so they can make more money, and obviously we can too. But I think in this next year, we instituted Salesforce.com because contacts and the management of those contacts, I mean, that's a gold mine, and it's just something we've got to concentrate on. And with any new salesman or even seasoned sales professional, make sure those contacts are still good. In the last few years, there's a lot of companies that or a lot of contacts that have moved from one company to the other, as well as there are a lot of job openings in a lot of these manufacturing companies that no one knows about. A lot of times we do, and still those engineers or designers or technicians, they're still moving from company to company because they've got a valuable skill, and maintaining that relationship with those customers is still important. I think we've all, heard a lot of the sales adages, and people buy from people they like and trust. If you can follow a customer from one company to the next, it's a lot easier to get into that next company they're in if you've got a friend inside that likes your product, likes how you call on them, and has been a good customer for many years. I think Michael, Steve, and I have customers that we've called on for the last 20 years at a number of these companies, and they continue to do business with us because AlphaBio has always come through when they've needed a product or a solution.
Well, now before we finish here, Kent, tell us how they would get in touch with you. Where would they call if they wanted to talk to a company that's really making a significant change in the way that they, what they're looking for in terms of referrals, the marketplace that they're changing around with, the innovation they're doing, and the way they're restructuring their relationships with manufacturers. How would they get in touch with you?
We've got a company phone number, and I think we all have extensions, and the company number is 949-858-4999. If you choose my extension, it tells you call my cell phone because I'm out in the field and I've got a smartphone like I think everyone at the office does, so that we're pretty nimble and agile out there. If anybody would like to call and talk about what we're doing, my cell phone number is 949-795-3900, and I'd be glad to talk with anybody, or drop me an email at kent@alphabio.com, and if they've got a question or a suggestion, I'd be glad to correspond with them. And if they have
Excellent.
Something that I can't answer, I'd route it to either Michael or engineering Steve and get that answer back to him.
That's super. I really appreciate you taking time and being on the phone, even from the Bay Area up there. That's wonderful. Keep on keeping on. Sounds like you're got a lot of good momentum and doing some good things and got great opportunities. Best to you and Michael and Steven. Climb that mountain.
Well, great. Thank you, Will.
All righty. Take care. Well, there we have Kent Lovin, one of our very good, accomplished professional salespeople, the regional sales manager for AlphaBio. AlphaBio is a company that is dedicated to exceeding customers' expectations for quality service and technical support. It's a wonder to behold. So now let's take a little break before we get to our next very interesting guest. Let's take a break and hear from our sponsors.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Large companies with complex sales channels have sophisticated lead management needs. They require customized lead management systems and services, and integration with additional systems. That's why, since 1981, these companies have relied on SmartLead by AdTrack, the only full-service lead management company with customized systems for lead management, Salesforce automation, and analytics. These systems are managed by each client's dedicated account manager and are integrated with SmartLead's in-house marketing services that include a contact center, email marketing services, print services, direct mail and fulfillment, and an ISO-certified warehouse. SmartLead by AdTrack. 3 decades of pioneering lead management best practices and systems for complex lead management needs. For more information, visit our website at smartlead.com.
And now we have a real treat today. It's not often that we get to talk to somebody who's taken a company from the very humble beginnings, begun to put it together, struggled through all the ups and downs of working with labs and making them work, getting salespeople, finding the right, just the right touch to approach the marketplace, and then finally beginning to take advantage of not only services but product offerings and using some very interesting and creative financial techniques along the way. So we're really pleased. I'm really pleased, and I think you'll be really pleased to hear from Frank Jast, the CEO of Chromadex. So welcome to Pilgrim Talks, Frank.
Thanks for having me on, Will.
So tell us, you know, not everybody knows what Chromadex does. It's this kind of hidden gem in Irvine.
Yeah. Well, what we do is we essentially sell both products and services. The products that we sell are largely phytochemicals, meaning chemicals isolated from plants, and we have a 500-page catalog of items that we sell primarily for anything from quality control to research. And we also have a complementary line of services out of our lab facility that we have in Boulder, Colorado. And we serve the food, beverage, dietary supplement, cosmetic, and also fringing into pharmaceutical, targeted primarily on this concept of, or focus, I should say, on natural products.
Well, that's all right. So who uses these? Who are your customers?
Well, I mean, it could be everything from large companies like Kraft Food or Pepsi, Coca-Cola, companies like Cargill, to smaller companies in the dietary supplement space. It could be Estee Lauder. And also on the research track, we get universities or research institutes that need both the products and services as part of research that they would be doing.
Mm-hmm. Now, seems to me that there's been some changes in the marketplace and the regulations that have helped you. Is that right?
Absolutely, yeah. There's and it's not necessarily just in the U.S., but worldwide, there's been an increase of regulatory all over the world, that is, in the sense of there's a clampdown on how these products are made, the quality of the products, and then the claims that are being made about these products, and then the level of scientific substantiation there is on those products to back up the claims that are made.
So if a company puts out What's it called?
Well, they're also referred to as like nutraceuticals.
Yeah, if they put out a nutraceutical and they want to claim that it reduces weight, you got weight loss, it stops headaches.
Right.
They now have to, even more than ever before, they have to back up that claim, right?
Correct. Yeah.
How does that affect your business?
Well, I mean, the FDA has been definitely, the FDA and the FTC both have been clamping down pretty heavily in the category, not just in that area, too, but, I mean, you can see in the news, like Cheerios, for instance, there was big news about Cheerios make the cholesterol claim, and then the FDA and FTC had come down on them about making that they reduces cholesterol claim. Mm-hmm. And the same thing in dietary supplements. There's been a significant increase, or the category of nutraceuticals, as you mentioned. There's a huge increase of regulatory burden now. The FDA implemented GMPs, or good manufacturing practices, and the last ratchet of that fell into place last June in 2010. And Nobody really stood to benefit or stands to benefit more from that increased regulatory than we do.
Mm-hmm. So how has business been over the last couple of years?
It's been robust. I mean, after the sort of the economic meltdown, 2008, 2009, 2010, you know, we hear stories of it being tough for companies, having declining sales and having to cut back on expenses or cutting back on personnel, and it's been the opposite for us. In 2009, we grew by 30-40%.
What was that? How much was it? I thought you said 30 or 40%.
30 to 40%. That's right. In a time
is
when
that is that a little or a lot for your company?
Well, I mean, if there wouldn't have been an economic meltdown, it probably would have been much higher than that. But, you know, that's a decent growth rate. Anything in the range of, 30, 40, 50% is pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have been growing regularly. I mean, that's been a consistent pattern to grow. Is that right?
Yeah, since we opened the doors in late 1999, that's correct. Straight line up.
And you did some very interesting things. I think it was John Della Grotta that was telling me that you did some very interesting things financially.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it was Bart Greenberg telling me that. What did you do?
Well, number one, when I started the company back in 1999, I started the company and we were out seeking financing for the company right before the internet bubble blew up. So we elected to take a route of not raising money and basically growing the company through bootstrapping. So we bootstrapped the company to grow it up essentially to almost for the first 7 or 8 years without really having any significant financing. We turned the course on that back in 2008 when we actually did a reverse merger, meaning we merged into a publicly traded company and raised about $4 or $5 million associated with the reverse merger, which was a pipe transaction. So,
It's called a what?
A pipe.
A pipe.
Essentially, it's a private. It's a private placement.
Okay.
For private equity. Mm-hmm. So, they money was exchanged in exchange for equity in the company, and now ChromaDex is a publicly traded company. We've been public now for coming up on actually 3 years in June.
Was that a difficult process?
No, I wouldn't say it's a difficult process. You definitely have to know what you're doing. It's not for the fainted heart, let's put it that way. There's a whole series of pitfalls and traps that you could go into, and you know, it was great because we had, you know, Bart Greenberg was our counsel at that point when we were going through that whole transaction. You need to have some smart people to evaluate the the deal terms, if you will.
And now, when you say negotiate those deal terms, is it that you have to have somebody to make sure that you have Do you have everything you need up against the current owner of the public company, or is it to negotiate the regulations?
Well, I mean, the public company is nothing more than a shell, so there's really no existing business. It's a business that was formerly publicly trading that really ceased to operate, but they kept the company going as a shell. So really, it's the cleanliness of the shell is what's key, is that, you know, everybody talks about getting a clean shell. It's not really an operating company. So if it's done properly, actually in our case it ended up going very smoothly, but if it's done properly, a clean shell is, you're really inheriting no liability or no problems associated with what was formerly a potential operating company.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, was it expensive?
No. If you manage it properly, it shouldn't be expensive. Going public versus the cost of going public, it's very cheap as a comparison to doing an IPO. Mm-hmm. If managed properly, an IPO can cost millions of dollars. Doing a reverse merger can cost a quarter of the cost of doing, say, the IPO route.
What would be if there were a company that was considering going public? What would be, how would a CEO make the decision about whether to go the route that you took with a PIPE or with an IPO?
Right. If you have considerable mass, it's a lot easier to go the IPO route. If you have considerable market traction, you're well known, you have a brand equity in that is huge, then the IPO route is clearly a way to, probably a more efficient way to go. But even now, as you probably realize, over the past 3 years, the IPO market has been really kind of soft. Mm-hmm. And even big-name companies have said, well, I'm going public. Well, now they're not going public because they can't get the traction they need to really float it at the price that they want to go to the market with.
Mm-hmm.
This route is, to a certain extent, can be a little bit more controllable, but the real answer is this, is that you better have a good reason to go public.
Mm-hmm.
You don't go public for the sake of going public, let's put it that way. You go public because you have an intent and there's a plan.
Uh-huh.
We actually, on the core of that, you had alluded to something else earlier on in the call, but the reason why we did it, we had a very good reason as to why we did it, is that we'd been planning a specific portion of the company, which was actually part of the original business plan, which is essentially getting into more of the novel ingredient business, meaning Chromadex is now actually selling or marketing ingredients that are being sold for inclusion in food, dietary supplement, food, or cosmetic products.
Mm-hmm. And so that was the reason for the going public.
We needed access to capital, and we wanted to make sure that we had a consistent supply of access to capital as we needed as we grew that business. And as we grow that business, we're going to need capital in tranches depending upon the growth of the company. And being in a public vehicle makes it a lot easier in some cases to keep a steady flow of financing coming to the company.
Mm-hmm. All right, so the goal was to get access to capital on a regular basis. And so that would have meant you probably didn't want to go to a bank, or you probably certainly didn't want to go to venture capitalists, because you didn't need that. You had a company that was up and running.
Exactly.
And you didn't want to sell it to an equity firm and have all that management overhead. So the choice was to go public. Now, once you finished with the PIPE, is your status as a public company the same as if you had gone IPO?
To a certain extent, yeah. I mean, we're a publicly traded company. People can buy the stock on a daily basis, and they've been able to do so since we did that reverse merger, you know, almost two and a half years ago, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
We do enjoy the status of a publicly traded company. We are a bulletin board stock, so it's an OTCBB stock right now. We are not formally listed on an exchange like Amex or NASDAQ or NYSE yet. Mm-hmm. But that's the next step for us.
All right. Now, when you did this, did you have to do the dog and pony show? Did you have to go around the country talking to investors before, you know, before you did the reverse merger so that they were all ready to pounce on it when it became public?
No, we didn't. We had a group, the group that facilitated the transaction, that was their responsibility. Their responsibility was to make sure that the deal was full in terms of they were the one who brought the parties in that were the shareholders that bought into the company.
Now, was this Bart?
Bart was the attorney who negotiated or helped us negotiate the terms of the deal. But okay. There was a group out of it was one of a bank out of New York, Newcastle.
Mm-hmm.
And Newcastle was the one who did the who basically coordinated both the reverse merger into the shell and also the private placement or the pipe that happened simultaneously with the reverse merger.
And so they were the ones who came up with the capital. I mean, they contacted the investors and put that together.
Correct. That's right.
All right. And then presumably you got to pay them out of the proceeds from the raise.
That's right. They got paid a portion of the raise.
That's good. Like buying a house, right?
Kind of. It's like a commission. It's negotiated. Yeah, they get a certain percentage of whatever the take is. That's right.
Right. And it comes out.
Everybody gets paid.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
And anybody who says that they're not getting paid, there's something suspicious about that.
All right. So now you've gotten access to the capital. You've gone through that, and you're on your way to moving beyond the bulletin board stock. And now, talk to us about the product lines that you're doing. I find this fascinating. What is it that you're moving into?
Well, I mean, the core basis of our entire business is on this, really, in the area of what I refer to as natural products. So, and that's obviously a very hot category at the moment. And by natural products, what I mean is, the consumer base is really looking for products that are clean, they're green, they're sustainable. There's a whole range of buzzwords associated with that. And, you know, Whole Foods is a perfect example of a stomping ground for that type of activity. And so an example is, you know, consumers today don't necessarily want to consume products that contain what I would call legacy ingredients. Legacy ingredients are things that are chemicals that don't necessarily have the best reputation or could be potentially viewed as harmful or not necessarily healthy is a better way to put it. And products today are substituting or removing these old legacy ingredients like high fructose corn syrup as an example.
Yay! Move it out, right?
Move it out and move something else in to substitute that is, you know, that has a perception of not only just that it's being substituted with something else, that it's being substituted with something else that's natural and potentially beneficial. And that sort of is the eye of the storm of where we fit. Our 500-page catalog is a very unique set of compounds that we've gathered over many years that are isolated from plant sources.
Uh-huh.
And these large companies essentially acquire these compounds from us for research use so that they can use it, the toolbox that we've created, if you will, to find the next best, greatest things for, it could be anything from a sugar substitute to a salt substitute to a bitter blocking compound to something that may provide a health benefit.
So you were mentioning something earlier in our conversation yesterday about stevia. How's that? What's going on with stevia?
Well, stevia is we were involved in stevia from the very earliest of days before it was ever on the shelf. And Chromadex is still to this day is one of the few companies that has a full range of chemistry associated with stevia, and we sell those compounds right now to anybody involved in stevia who's looking at stevia. And obviously, that's a hot product right now in the market as a natural alternative sweetener, non-caloric. Natural sweetener,
yes.
Actually.
Yeah. I've been fascinated to see bottles of soda that say with real sugar.
Right.
I don't know that that's necessarily a step forward.
Well, you know, it's real sugar. The difference is that instead of necessarily processed high fructose corn syrup, that it was perhaps cane sugar.
Oh,
instead of, so there is in fact a difference.
Ah, I see. All right. Okay. All right. I was assuming that it's with real sugar versus sugar substitute or something. But,
well, it's not necessarily sugar substitute. Well, sugar substitutes are also under fire because most of those are chemical compounds, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
And some of them, and most people can attest to this because you talk to some people that just don't react well to those compounds. I can't touch that stuff. It makes me feel ill, or I don't feel right when I take it. And there's some merit to that in some cases, but stevia is a good example of an alternative compound that, in fact, is a natural compound.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a zero-calorie, high-intensity sweetener.
Now, tell me what you see the future of these natural products. What do you see happening over the next 3, 4, 5 years?
Well, you're going to see the trends, and a good example, if you just hit the Wall Street Journal today, actually, is that there was an announcement of, and this goes back to previous announcements, but Nestle has made an announcement that they're now in the focused heavily in an area called medical food. And the focus there, and you'll find that Pepsi and Kraft and the Unilevers and most of these companies are now focused on trying to come out with products that offer the benefit of sustenance, meaning you're going to consume a product that meets its primary objective, which is to fill your daily calories, but also have been fortified with things that will provide you with alternative health benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Controls your cholesterol, may control blood sugar, meaning effect on diabetes, will have an effect on improving digestion. That's the concept of probiotic.
Mm-hmm.
So you're seeing these fortified foods that are making very specific health claims, very similar to what a dietary supplement or a nutraceutical would. But it's part of or ingrained of in something that you consume on a daily basis. Like a good example is orange juice that's been fortified with calcium.
Mm-hmm.
Calcium isn't necessarily naturally contained in an orange juice product. It's been fortified into it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that concept is something that's going to be, it's blowing up right now. It's blowing up in a big way.
So in on the one hand, you would be providing services to help certify that, in fact, they are doing that.
Correct.
And then you would also be now, you are going to be in the position to provide the products. Is that right? To put in.
We're going to be providing the next generation sort of novel ingredients because I guess along the way we've got some very sophisticated chemistry and some very smart chemists on staff, and the whole team of people here that we have are essentially we're a magnet for what I would call market intelligence, meaning we have a better view on trying to figure out what the next best things may be based on the core research that we're doing and just being plugged into the position that we're plugged into. So why not launch our own ingredients to sell to these same companies because we think we found something that has a high level of scientific credibility.
Mm-hmm. So in effect, you are in a position to become a strategic advisor as well as a vendor for those companies.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good, enviable position. Now, the question is, are there other companies that are doing this, or are you going to be, the company in this category and grow to fill it?
When we talk to most investors that we're sitting down with to talk to, I mean, it's they always say the one mistake you make going to a room is saying you have no competition. and
right.
Unfortunately, I have to say with conviction, we really don't have any true direct competitors. That that have a business model put together the way that we do, and a lot of our investors are, have invested in the company because of that.
Mm-hmm. So you are in a position to grow as this, from just gently imagining this, Pepsi decides to add ingredients.
Right.
That's not going to be a small event. And
that's
if you're in the position to advise them and then provide the products for them, that's a significant amount of revenue.
That's a big deal. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
you don't have Pepsi on your speed dial, do you?
I do.
Well, that's wonderful. And all of that from just sitting here in Orange County, a little company sitting over there on Murillans. It's kind of a hidden jewel, right?
That's exactly right.
So what do you see? What can you prepare us? What can you share with us that we might see in the next year? What might hit the marketplace that would be interesting for us?
Well, I have to be, of course, careful with that because I am a public company, so unfortunately I have the regulatory burden on that front that, I can't make public statements about things. But I can, a little foreshadowing of that is that you're going to, ChromaDex is, our business model over the next, 12 months in particular is to continue to essentially launch, leveraging not only growing our core business, which is the products and services side of things, but now leveraging and expanding our new ingredients business, which is focused on launching new and novel healthy ingredients for foods, beverage, and dietary supplements. And that you're going to see a lot of that coming out of us over the next 12 months, 24 months, 36 months, actually. It's strategic research that we're doing is not necessarily short term, and again, we're not necessarily a Facebook overnight success story here. It's taken 10 years of hard work to build the platform that we've had, and we've been patient to sit back and wait for the market to mature to a point where it was accepting of the types of things that we've been working on for 10 years. So,
mm-hmm. That's what's been very impressive to me about your company and about your leadership in that company is that you've consistently been looking to accomplish the dream that you have, the goals that are there, and all the time that I've known you, I've been very impressed with that you know what quality looks like, you're looking for it, and you don't get distracted by short-term benefits. And I think that's just one of the wonderful things that you bring to the Orange County community, and I applaud you for that.
Thank you. It's been a long road, but it's good that we're finally we're at the point where things are really starting to sort of accelerate for us right now. So
yeah, that's wonderful. That's great. I thank you so much for spending your time with us today. You've got a wonderful track record. You've got some very good things going on now, and it sounds like you have just a huge opportunity ahead of you. So I look forward to talking with you soon and beginning to anticipate great celebration down the way.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, Will. Thanks for the invitation.
You bet. Take care.
Okay. Take care. Yep.
Well, there you have it. We've got a couple of companies in Orange County that are making their way through consistent, sometimes quiet, sometimes noisier innovation. Looking at various marketplaces, nurturing them, listening to what customers need, listening to what their prospects are looking for, using selling systems that will help articulate the struggles and the dreams that customers have. Fine people, Kent Lubin, Michael Gagne, Frank Jask. Great group of people we have here in Orange County. We've got lots to be thankful for. Well, this is the Pilgrim on the 405 wishing you a great week. Look forward to talking with you again with some other wonderful people from Orange County. Don't listen to those naysayers on the news. Listen to people around you. Ask them how they're doing, and you're going to be very surprised to discover that lots of people Lots of people are doing well and are going to be doing better. So this is the Pilgrim on the 405 saying, make it a great week.
You've been listening to the one and only Pilgrim on the 405, your personal guide through the strange new world of sales techniques and technologies, only on OCTalkRadio.net.